We are going to continue our discussion from last week. Now, I added some armacomos, so you should download the new armacomos, even though you'll see the first 4 pages or so look like the same as last week. I mean, they are the same as last week, but then there's some that's added. So you want to look for where it begins, morality, page part two. And also sign in. So last week, we considered what to do when a person sees a mitzvah that contradicts their moral intuition. And we're going to continue that discussion. We're going to consider the approaches of the Rav and Rav Cook on that question. But before we get there, I want to take one step back and question my very assumption. Maybe there's no such thing as a moral intuition. The premise of the question is false. Our sense of morality should stem entirely from the Torah. And as such, the question does not even begin. So let's try to understand and address that briefly. There are a number of places where the Gemara tells us that we have to follow Svara. There are 3 places, you have them over here, from Bava Kama, Ksubas, and Nida, where the Gemara even asks, Lama li kra svarahu? Why do I need a pasuk to teach me something? I could derive it from a svara. Now, that's a fascinating point, because the Gemara with that question is A, telling us that svara is binding. If I'm chayiv to do something based off of svara, then that's ki'ilu, it was a pasuk. In fact, the Gemara says in the case of Ritzicha being a harig val yavor. So why is it that Ritzicha is a harig val yavor, that you can't kill someone to save your own life? The Gemara says it's a svarahu miyam rita dama didach samuk tfei doma dama du gavra samuk tfei. Who says he's more worthy to live than you are? And then the Gemara says, we make a hekesh from there to naira murasa, because it says kena davar hazeh. In other words, we're making a hekesh to a din that was derived from svar. It's ki'ilu, it was written. So when we learn a certain halacha, misvara, it's kilu, at least to a large degree, it was written. So A, the Gemara is telling us that it's not binding, B, that it's kilu is written. And in fact, there are a number of places where the Gemara actually goes ahead and will reinterpret a pasuk so that it's teaching me a chiddush. Because what the Gemara is saying, when it asks, Lamali kras varahu, why do I need a pasuk? It's a svara. It's telling me that the Torah doesn't need to tell me things that I could have figured out misvara. So it'll sometimes reinterpret something in order to make it a chiddush. Like, I don't have time to look at examples, but one example is in Chulin and Daf Kuf Yudalit and Mabez. So now the truth is, we could ask an obvious question, which is, well, 1 second. If it is true that the Torah only tells me a chidushim, so why did it tell me lo sirtzach? I mean, I could have figured that out, misvara. So I think there's more than one way to answer that question. It could be that when something is stated explicitly, when it has a din of a mitzvah, it is treated a little bit differently than a svara. Another answer might be that actually it's not true. I mean, it's true that cold-blooded murder is obviously wrong. That's a svara. But it's not obvious from an ethical or moral perspective that there should be a categorical prohibition against ritzicha. For example, a person could very reasonably argue that from a moral perspective, there's nothing wrong with mercy killing. After all, the person's in great pain, and they want to die, and they've made the decision they want to die. And adirabba, it's immoral to deny them their request and cause them to keep on suffering. So when the Torah says lo sirtzach and teaches us that murder is categorically prohibited, so it is telling me something that perhaps I would not have known misvara. Now, you could say, okay, well, these sources, do they tell me that there's such a thing as a moral intuition? I mean, maybe the Gemara just isn't talking about this vague sense of morality. It's talking about a rigorous legal argument, like, or Miyamer to Dama Didach Sumuk Tvei, Dama Dama Dugavar Sumuk Tvei. It's a very rigorous argument. Is this a makor for a more general notion of morality? So I think we'll argue the answer is yes, and we'll see some examples of that. But before we get there, I want to point out some other objections that you might have to this idea. So one objection is that human reasoning is uncertain. After all, you know, we don't always get it right. We make mistakes. So what the Gemara is telling us is, yes, of course, that's true. And like we pointed out last week, when the Torah tells us that our svara is wrong, or our intuition about morality is wrong, we follow what the Torah says. But generally speaking, the Torah is telling us, yes, you should trust your intellect. In other words, lama likras varahu, if you could figure this out, then you should follow what you think. The Torah is giving us, has a kilu emunah, as Chazal say in us, and in our ability to determine that which is true and that which is right. Another objection you might have had is that aren't all questions addressed in the Torah, in the halacha? Why do we need svara? But again, the Gemara seems to say, no, that's not true. That adarabba, if I could figure something out misvara, then I don't need a pasuk, and I need to figure out something else to do with that pasuk. Another objection, and this is perhaps even more important, is, does this concept of svara, especially when used in the moral realm, imply an ethic that's independent of God? After all, if we have to follow svara, even though God didn't tell us, so maybe that implies that there is a morality outside of God, which is independent of God, maybe even limits God, and we have to follow that morality. So if you take a look at the next source over here, Rav Tursky, there's a piece from Rav Tursky, who's medayik from the Rambam, or he pointed out the Rav was medayik from the Rambam at the beginning of Mishnah Torah, that is not the case. So take a look here. Judaism does not recognize a natural moral independent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of all morality. Rambam opens his magnum opus by declaring that the fundamental principle which underlies all others and the pillar of all wisdom is knowing that of the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, creator of heaven and earth. Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal commented that the Rambam clearly indicates that all wisdom depends upon knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, i.e., there's no ethical or moral knowledge independent of him. It's interesting where the Rambam says it. It's the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yesod HaTorah over there, Yesod HaYesodos, the Amud HaChachmos, Leida She'esh HaMatzui Rishon, V'umam Tzikol Nimtza, V'chol Nimtza Mishamayim V'aretz, U'mash Benem Lo Nimtzu Elam Yimitas Himatz'o. So the Rambam, the way I actually have read the Rambam is the Rambam just telling you that the Yesod of all Yesodos and the Mood of all Chachmos is to know that there's a Matsui Rishon. Apparently the Rav held that the phrase Amud HaChachmos indicate that all Chachmos rely upon this thing. In other words, that there's a Matsui Rishon that is part of the Amud HaChachmos, which indicates all Chachma is from him. Either way, the Rav was telling us, and the Rambam seems to say, that there is no ethic independent of God. So how is it that we could say, well, we could derive an ethical svara independently of God if there's no ethics independent of God? Another interesting question, which we're not going to talk about right now, though Rav Tursky in that article addresses, is how do we understand psukim like Hashofei Kol Aretz Al Yaseh Mishpat, where Avraham Avinu seems to challenge God about the destruction of Sodom on moral grounds. So maybe another time we could talk about that, or take a look at what Rav Tursky writes. But our question is the more fundamental question, which is, does the fact that the Torah tells us to follow Svara, and let's go further, to even do that which you think is moral without a tzivoy, does that indicate that there's a morality outside of God? Let's give an example, which I didn't give you these psukim, but just to fully appreciate it. Why was the cities of stone destroyed? So the psukim say in Yechezkel that the reason is because they didn't give tzedaka. Yad ani ve'avion lo hechziku. So one second, I don't understand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't tell them to do tzedaka. I mean, tzedaka is not one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. How could they be punished? How could they be held accountable for something that they weren't commanded to do? Well, the answer is obvious. The answer is that they could have figured this out on their own. As the Ramban says a little earlier, and Rabbeinu Bachya says about this, that if something is morally wrong and we could figure that out on our own, so we don't need a Navi to be masir on it. So the people of stone could have realized and should have realized that when someone is in need, you help them. And their moral philosophy of shali, shali, v'shalcha, shalcha was wrong, was immoral. They should have realized that. And as such, they're held accountable for their failure. So clearly, maybe we would argue there's an ethic of God, because you have to know that even without God. So the answer is that no, that question is absolutely false. There is no independent ethic independent of God. The pshat is that Hashem allows us to know what's right and what's wrong through more than one means. One way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaches us what's right and what's wrong is through revelation, through nevuah, like the mitzvah HaTorah, or even the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. But another way that he allows us to ascertain, to determine that which is right and that which is wrong, is using our seichel. If you take a look, just skip down to Makoros, the second play, Ki Hashem yiten chachma mipiv das usvuna. In other words, we get that knowledge. How do we know what's right and what's wrong in the event that Hashem didn't tell us? We also get that from Hashem. Our seichel is from Hashem. The way we think is from Hashem. It is true. We can determine that the right thing to do is to be charitable without a tzivoy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that knowledge, that achma, mipiv das usmuna. So the idea that we're meant to do that which is right, even without a formal ashara, doesn't indicate an ethic independent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It simply tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects us to figure out what's wrong, not just through that which is revealed to us through revelation, but also on our own. Now, another interesting question we can think about, and we're going very quickly, these are a lot of important yesodos. Another, I think, important point to think about is like this. We just said before that there is no ethic outside of God, that everything ethical comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As the Rav was medayik from Bechos Yisrael, it would seem then that the Rav is telling us that there is nothing besides God. Enod milvado means even an ethical and moral system. In other words, there's nothing limiting. There's nothing binding God. To say that there's a moral code outside of God that binds God is a stira to his achdos, because that would imply that there's God in something else. There's God in this ethical and moral system, which is false. Well, is that really true? The Rambam writes something very interesting. It's not just the Rambam, actually. The Rambam, the Rashba says it. There are even Achronim that make this point, like the Chazanish. But here I gave you the example of the Rambam, since we're working within the Rambam right now. So the Rambam writes that God is bound by that which is theoretically possible. In other words, God can't do that which is impossible. Let's give an example. Well, let's first read what the Rambam says, and then we'll give an example. So the Rambam writes over here, is from Moreh Nevuchim 3:15. We do not ascribe to God the power of doing that which is impossible. No thinking man denies the truth of this maxim. those who have no idea of logic ignore this maxim. All philosophers consider it impossible for one substratum to have at the same moment two opposite properties, right? So that's the logical rule, the rule of opposites. Likewise, it is impossible that God should produce a being like himself or annihilate or corporify or change himself. The power of God is not assumed to extend to any of these impossibilities. So what's he saying? Right? So let's give a simple example. Can God destroy himself? So, you know, I think when we were little kids, we were taught that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do everything. That's what omnipotence means. Kol Yachol, he could do anything. But it's obvious he can't destroy himself. After all, his existence is necessary. It's impossible otherwise. The Rambam is another example. He can't corporify himself. The Rambam proved, he showed that it could be demonstrated that God cannot have a physical body, that, among other things, would contradict Achdus Hashem. So God cannot be and not be at the same time. The Rambam writes then that God is, in a sense, limited by logic. Now, what does it mean when we say that God could do everything? He's called Yachol. But there's no chisaron in his inability to destroy himself. Adirabba, that's a maila. It's a reflection of the fact that his existence is necessary. In fact, it would be a chisaron to be able to destroy himself, because that would mean it's not, he doesn't necessarily exist. So the idea here is that when we say that God is omnipotent, that he could do everything, we really mean he could do anything theoretically possible. Now, does that indicate that there is something other than God? I mean, after all, if we're saying that logic limits God, why is that different than saying ethics limit God? Why does saying ethics limit God contradict divine oneness, according to the Rambam, but saying that logic limits him doesn't? So I think that the answer is pretty straightforward. Just because there is, let's say it like this. If we were to say that he could destroy himself or corporify himself, so that in and of itself would be a contradiction of his oneness. It's not the pshat that the Rambam is saying that there's this body of logic or ethics that is true and limits God. Rather, adirabba, the very nature of his oneness contradicts or demands the absolute impossibility of his being able to destroy himself or corporify himself. Relate to, though, perhaps this is another time, another discussion, what we mean by logic. In other words, the Rambam isn't saying that there's this thing called a system of logics which exists independently of God and limits God, but rather this is something that's inherent and impossible otherwise. And perhaps that's why it's different than a system of morals and ethics, which if they were to exist outside of God and limit God, would be a contradiction to his oneness. Now, let's assume, based off what we've been saying now, we've been saying that there is no such thing as a ethical or moral system that exists outside of God and limits God. Do something unethical or immoral, right? If, you know, rejecting the idea of divine command ethics, right? We're taking one side on the Euthyphro dilemma, if you wish. So he should be able to do anything he wants, right? There's nothing limiting him. So I don't think that's true either, because the Torah describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu as just, as merciful. And since injustice or cruelty contradict those descriptions of God, and as we saw in the Rambam, God is bound by the laws of contradiction, so it follows that he can't be unjust and he can't be cruel. But again, that's not because there's a system of ethics independent of God that limits God, but it's because he is true and he is just and he is kind, etc. Here you see a quote from Ravine Lichtenstein, where he, I think, more or less makes this point. And then I'll take your question, Israel. It is true, therefore, that certain things are simply inconceivable for him. But this is not an external constraint. In other words, if we said that there's a system of ethics independent of God that limits God, that would be an external constraint, and that would be a stira to his achdus. No, this is not an external constraint, and therefore we need not be shaken by the thought that somehow his power is not boundless. By virtue of his very essence, certain things not only shall not, but cannot be willed by God. God and moral evil are simply and purely incompatible. In other words, just like we were saying before, that the reason why it's not a stira to his achdus to say that he can't corporify himself or he can't exterminate himself, because that wasn't coming from something outside, but rather is internal. So too, the fact that we're saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't be cruel is not a constraint from the outside, but it's internal. And therefore, since it's internal, so it's certainly true. So let's summarize what we said thus far. And then I'll take some questions. So number one, we said that God, that there's no moral and ethical system independent of God that binds God. Number two is, we said, but that doesn't mean that God could do what's impossible. Number three is, we said that also it is the case that God can't be cruel or unjust or the like, because the Torah describes God as just and merciful, and that would contradict that. So that's also not a contradiction of divine unity, because it's internal. Then we said, even though there's no ethical code that binds God from the outside, but nevertheless, we are expected to act in a moral and ethical way, even without a command by God. And the reason is because God communicates to us in more than one way. He tells us what is right and what is wrong, both through revelation and through our seichel. And therefore, the reason why we have to be moral people, even without a divine command, is because Hashem told us to, by creating in us the ability to figure out that this is right or this is wrong. We'll just close with one quote, I think, which expresses this very beautifully. This is from Rabbi Yerucham, the famous Mashkiach in the Mir. B'mitzvah shel seichel ein shum viturim. Shehaseichel hu mitzvah shel teva. V'hi me'anhagas habore al yedei shaliach. In other words, when you have a mitzvah shel seichel, so that is also an hagas habore al yedei shaliach. That is HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling you what to do. A Navi is a shaliach to tell you what's Ratzon Hashem. And also our seichel is a shaliach to tell you what is Ratzon Hashem. So therefore, even though, like we said before, human intellect is fallible, it is feeble, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu trusts us to use our seichel to figure out that which is right and that which is wrong. And I should add one more thing, though. I want to take your questions and then move to the next point. You might say that, okay, but maybe that's true kodem matan Torah, but nitna Torah v'nischat shalacha. So yeah, the people of Shechem, of Sodom, I mean, were destroyed because they failure to give tzedakah. But the Jewish people, after we got the Torah, so nitna Torah v'nischat shalacha, and we should look to Torah exclusively to figure out what's right and what's wrong. There might be truth to that statement to some degree, but I don't think it's the whole story. First of all, like we've seen, even after the Torah is given, it is demanded of us to use our seichel to determine what's right and what's wrong. Let's say in the case of Svara, Lamali Kras Svarahu. There are many places where the Torah presumes that a person will be able to figure out what's right and what's wrong, even without a demand, a direct tzivui from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just one more example of this, but then I'll take your this example is given by the Sefer Hasidim and the Shla and others. So Moshe Rabbeinu was angry at the officers and the generals after the war with Midian for not killing the women folk. And both the Sefer Chassidim and the Shla point out, you see here, that even though Moshe never told them to do it, they should have figured it out on their own, and they were held accountable for that failure. It's like, you know, with my kids, sometimes I say, why didn't you do this? And they say, well, you never told me. Well, apparently, at least with respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's not an excuse. Okay, so... any questions?
Oh yeah, you cut out, so I wasn't sure if you called on me.
Oh yes, I did. Go ahead.
Not to mix pools, but I'm curious if the explanation that we have for how we reconcile what seems to be the contradiction or the limitation of God works in the model, or I guess, or is explaining this in a similar model to what we were discussing 2 weeks ago with the idea of tzimtzum, that meaning that it's an internal restriction that God himself has imposed, so to speak, on existence, that he can't do the illogical, that he can't do the impossible. Whereas the impossibility for him to do the impossible is not, so to speak, equal in like formation as God, that it's not as essential or fundamental to existence.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and that might be true. There are those, even I mentioned today, that the Rambam, the Rashba, others point out that God can't do that which is impossible, the Ra'albag. There are others, based especially on the Maharal, and a number of Hasidic thinkers like Ishbitzer and Tzadok, Cook, who take this approach, and they say that, of course, he can. And that how could to say that God can't do something illogical is absurd. I mean, logic is something that we came up with. And others say it more like what you were saying, which is even to the extent that he can't, that's not an inherent objection, but it's something like you said, that he created that limitation upon himself. It's not inherent or fundamental. So you could take that approach. I don't think it sounds that way from the Rambam. Or the Rashba or the like, they're actually, but I think that's an approach that you could take.
So then how do they understand? I mean, the only thing that I'm, I guess, like having difficulty grasping is to say that it doesn't come from an internal place where like God himself imposed that restriction on himself, but at the same time, it's not an external limitation on God. Because it almost seems to say as if there is, like, I mean, I know we're saying this wasn't the case, but I don't really see how that does work, that there isn't this system of logic and reason and possibility, which God, so to speak, exists under and kind of is like subject to.
Right. So it's a good question. And I think this is a broader discussion. It actually is a somewhat of a debate among philosophers and also mathematicians about whether the laws, whether of logic or math or the like, to the extent, do they exist independently? Like, are they, or are they inherent? So I think, and I'm not by no means an expert on this question, but I think that the way I'm understanding it, at least for the Rambam, would be, and again, the alternative is to take your approach, but the way I was understanding it was the Rambam doesn't see them as something that exists and is limited, but it's inherent to the extent that anything exists, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists, this is true. So it's not something that denies Achduso, because it's not something separate from him, but as it were, it's part of him, which is part of all existence. But Okay, good. So that's the, I guess, the Hakadama for today, which is, let me ask, add one more point. And I guess this is, you know, Pashut. No, it's not Pashut. We've been talking about an ethic independent of God. We said there is no such thing. We've also seen the importance of figuring out what's right and what's wrong. And though perhaps usually that comes from the Torah, it's not limited to that. Now, the idea, sometimes people discuss this question of whether there's an ethic independent of halacha or not. Is what we're saying, does that indicate there's an ethic independent of halacha or not? So I think that to some degree, that's sort of a semantical question. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein makes this point. And he points out that, well, let's take an example. We have a mitzvah of kedoshim tiyu, which tells us that you can't be novel birshas haTorah. In other words, there are certain types of activities that are disgusting, that are immoral, or likewise the mitzvah of asisas ayasher v'asatov, which teaches me the obligation of lifnim mishur sadin. And it tells me that, you know, in a realm of business dealings, there are certain things that aren't, don't fall under any of the other restrictions. You know, I'm not cheating, I'm not stealing, but what I'm doing is immoral. That's true in the realm of Isser V'Hatter. The Ramban says, like being a glutton or a drunkard, it's true in the realm of business, like being perhaps, you know, not cheating and stealing, but having no rachamim. It's true in the realm of Shabbos. That's how the Rambam understands the Tishbos. So does that, if there's something that's immoral, that's wrong, even though it's not stated in Shulchan Aruch, so does that indicate that there's an ethic independent of halacha? So the answer is you could say, yeah. If you define halacha as that which is stated in Shulchan Aruch, so then the fact that there are things that are considered wrong, that are immoral, even though the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say it's immoral, so that would indicate a ethic independent of halacha. However, that's not really precise because the halacha, the Torah itself, tells us that you have to be kedoshim, you have to be tov, you have to be yashar. In other words, it's not, it itself is part of the Torah. Rather, the pshat is simply that the Torah can't contain every single thing and address every single question because that would be infinite. So the Torah teaches us the principles by which we can determine how to behave. So yes, there will be things that are immoral, even though they don't appear in Shulchan Aruch. And that's the idea that you see over here in the Ramban, in the which I gave you, we're not going to read it inside. An example of this maybe is from the Gemara Bava Metzia, which you have over here. The Magen Mishnah makes the same point in the as well. And, you know, that's the idea, the Gemara Bava Metzia Lamed Amid Beis, that says that Yerushalayim was destroyed al shehemidu dinayim al din Torah. And what does that mean? They didn't do lifnei mishur sadin. That too is part of halacha, is part of Torah. So yes, there's an ethic independent of halacha only if you define halacha as that which is stated explicitly, that which it states in Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, there are things that are wrong to do, even though you can't find a makor in Shulchan Aruch. But fundamentally, it doesn't indicate a ethic independent of the Torah, because that too comes from the Torah. Okay, so with that in mind, with those hakdamos in mind, so I want to turn to the question that we started with, which is a moral or ethical system. What do I do when I encounter something that seems to be immoral? What am I supposed to do? So as we said before, and it's Pashut, that when you have something that is clearly prohibited by the, or commanded or prohibited by the Torah, then we're mevatel ardas, right? Like akedas Yitzchak, Yeah. Somebody's one second. Yeah. I'm sorry. I gave you.
Yes, I
thank you.
No, I know. You can't give me 2 spoons. Truly?
Spoon?
I need to take medication.
You need a spoon?
Truly, truly. I need truly to eat something to take medication.
You need food?
We need truly.
Truly?
Truly, or Google or something?
Yeah.
Because I have to take medication. I know my own doctors. You can. So this.
It's okay.
Yes.
You want me to warm it up? Is it cold?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure we can do this all
okay. Yeah. Sarah? Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. Yeah. So our question is talking about morality. Our question is to how do we deal with questions if it's something that the Torah clearly prohibits, so then okay, what are you going to do? Or the Torah clearly obligates, so that's clear. But what do we do in the case where like let's say the case we types of issues that we discussed last week, you know, how are we supposed to relate to them? When it comes to what we need to do, so of course we have to do what the Torah says. But how do we relate to it? How do we relate, let's say, in our example from last week, to something like slavery? So as I said, today we're going to look at two, I think, approaches to this question. They're not both directly addressing this question, but I think they're what they say, we'll see, is very telling. So we're going to start with Rav Kook, which you have over here. Rav Kook builds off of the idea that we've been seeing earlier that Svara is compelling, that the Torah goes ahead and tells us we have to trust our Seichel, and our Seichel itself comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Kook tells us something very interesting. He says that, well, look, let's take a step back into this, but to add, we do find that in many places, Tosos points this out in a number of places, for example, that if a pasuk could be understood in one of two ways, so Svara will dictate how you understand it. Rav Kook says, well, let's take this one step further. If Chazal were to, or the Sanhedrin Agadol, were to discover a situation whereby something in the Torah seems immoral, so they would understand the Torah in such a way so as to resolve that contradiction. So let's take a look at how he puts it. And this is from one of his letters, and he's discussing dealing with issues like slavery or war or the like. You know, how do we deal with it? And let's keep in mind, you know, what we saw last week from the Ikrim and the like about Dibra Torah Keneged Yetzer Hara. So here's what he writes. Musag hahitpatchut sheragil ha'am lechush. So the idea of development, that as people understand it, hu me'ora shel panim chadashos. People think it's something new. It's like a chiddush. It's something that wasn't there before and is something new. Hamevi kalos rosh, and that's why it leads to kalos rosh. Umash tani no chiomer shayedia ha'elyona hasokeres kol hamasim me rosh ve'atzof. He soveves es kol hatolados kulam. He amitas kabalas o malchus shamayim shehuchnu me rosh. Kol hasibos shisavivu hahavanos veharageshos lavoli de ha hechletos b'chol dor vador karoyu kanachem. But that's not what happens here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, kadma Torah l'briyas ha'olam, and included in Torah is everything, everything that would ever happen, all the thoughts that would ever be thought. Al kain efshar la'amitasa shel Torah his galos ki im beyos am Hashem kulo be'artzo. Now he says something interesting. So the amis of Torah can only be revealed more fully under certain circumstances, when we are in our right place, when it's am Hashem in Eretz Yisrael, mivuna b'chol tikuno ruchniyim v'chomriyim gam yachad. And in that case, where we have the appropriate ruchnias and gashmias, she'az tashuv Torah shebal pe l'amita le'isana. The role of Torah shebal pe, meaning to say, the way in which we interpret the Torah will be restored to its proper place. Lefi hakaras based in Hagadol, as understood by the based in Hagadol. So Rambam writes at the beginning of Hilchos Ma'arim that it's the responsibility of based in Hagadol to interpret Torah Shebal Peh. I mean, to interpret the Torah. They are the Torah Shebal Peh. They're the Amud Horah. And they will sit, Hayoshev v'makom Hashem v'char Hashem, Al kol davar asher yifalei l'mishpat, such that when you have any question about the law, like the pasuk says, ki palei davar mishpat l'mishpat bein dam l'dam bein din l'din, so v'kam tavalis ala makom asher yifchar Hashem. Asher yifalei l'mishpat, according to Rav Kook, is not just a question of, well, I don't know, you know, whether this particular type of meat is mutter or asher. But it's any type of pella in the mishpat. Ve'az anu betulchem shekol tolda chadasha tia muchteres bechol oz uvechol kodesh ki kdosh Yisrael Hashem. So at that point, when the Sanhedrin is restored, we'll be certain that a new understanding will be found with all the might and the kedusha. Ki kadosh Yisrael Hashem. V'im tipol she'ela al eze mishpat shabat Torah. And if there's a shayla about a certain thing in the Torah, shelefi musage musar ye'nireh shetzarech lios muvan b'ofen acher, such that based off of our understandings of morality has to be understood in a different way, az im be'emes al pi beistin Hagadol yuchlat sheze mishpat lo nemar ki im ba'osam hatanaim shekvar einam. So if Sanhedrin will decide at that point that that halacha is no longer relevant, it's subject to conditions, for example, that no longer exist, v'adayim tzalze mekor ba'torah, they'll find a mekor in the Torah. V'askamas hamoraos im koach based in v'drishas hamikra yachad. Einam dvarm shem is damnim b'mikra, ki im heim osios machkimos me'ora shel Torah ve'amitas Torah shebal peh. Shanu chayavim l'shmo l'shofet asher yeh b'yom ha'mahem, ve'ein kan hispatchut shel grayasa. So this doesn't have the negative kind of development, but rather it's a positive development. Now, I don't think Rav Kook is saying that, you know, Sanhedrin could just change the Torah at whim. You know, they see halacha doesn't, you know, seem moral, so they change it. No, there are rules of interpretation. And it's through their analysis of the Torah that what will eventually happen is that they'll resolve this tension. They'll figure out a solution. And that's going to be, you know, that's going to be the resolution to the question. So, you know, what will be if there's a mitzvah that seems immoral? When there's a Sanhedrin, there won't be a halacha that seems immoral, because Sanhedrin, using their koach of understanding the Torah, will find a solution. That's what Rav Kook writes. What about nowadays? You know, nowadays, does that mean, you know, we're stuck? So Rav Kook writes something very interesting. This is in a little bit of the letter. He says that we have to understand that to do this right now, we don't have a Sanhedrin, is also in accordance with his hashgacha, which is with his plan for history. I'll give you a mashal. So there's no question that there are aspects of Torah that are revealed over time. At the time of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, there was a tremendous gilui in terms of Torah Sasod, or again, at the time of the Arizal, ideas that nobody thought of beforehand, that nobody ever appreciated beforehand, were revealed to the world and became known and became understood. It's not an accident that it happened when it did. That's the way it was supposed to be. When the type of analysis of the Balei HaTosfos or a Brisker Lamdos or whatever it is. So we could see that as development, and it is, but it's also something that emerges from within the Torah and that was revealed, or Hashem allowed people to understand it when they did at that time, because that's the way it was supposed to be. And the same thing is true over here. Does that mean that the earlier thinkers that didn't realize this were wrong? No, and yes. What he's saying is that their understanding was the appropriate understanding at the time. It was necessary at the time. And Hashem allowed people to see more, understand more at a later time. He gives an interesting example. Here in this letter, he's talking about the mistakes in science that the world made, and including, presumably, Chazal. For example, the question of the geocentric model of the universe, the idea that everybody sort of assumed until several centuries ago that the world, that Earth, that man was at the center of the universe and everything revolved around him. And Rav Kook says, you know, why was it that way? Rav Kook answers that this was in order to spread the Torah's message and of the immense potential and the infinite value of human life. And then he says, so it's only when that idea, that lesson was sort of spread, that God then revealed another way, something else, which is the grandeur of the universe, in which we're able to appreciate our smallness, that we're this tiny, tiny, tiny speck in this vast universe, at this like little point. It's not that everything else is going around us. We're just this tiny speck in something so much bigger than us. And so when we are ready to understand that lesson, so Hashem allowed us to appreciate that lesson. And Rav Kook says the same thing is true when it comes to all sorts of, again, positive development. And when that happens, so then there is this possibility of seeing a contradiction which wasn't appreciated until now, and then coming up with a resolution. There's a lot of chidushim over here, and the implications of this idea is quite extraordinary. But I want to go on, since we just have a couple of minutes left, to the Rav. I just actually should add one last point, which is that Rav Kook warns against trying to revive the system prematurely. As we noted, he said that we're unable to do this now because we don't have a Sanhedrin. We're limited. We can't just interpret the Torah as we wish. So we, at this point, we're left with the tension. Now, what are we supposed to do with that tension, right? It's frustrating. So the answer, Rav Kook says, is not to prematurely change the system. That would be false. But rather, we have to daven for its restoration. You know, we say in Shon Esrei every day, Hashiva Shofteinu Kvar Rishonav, Yoatzeinu Kvar Tchila. We're davening to restore the judges and Sanhedrin and the like. V'haser mimenu yagon ve'anacha. And remove from us sorrow and sighing. And the implications are clear that, you know, the lack of Shoftim and Yoatzim is indeed the cause for much sorrow and sighing. Not physical pain. The restoration of judges won't necessarily restore that, but the pain that stems from uncertainty and confusion. And that's part of what we daven for when we daven for the restoration. So Rav Kook's approach certainly tells us, I think, plays up our trust in our moral intuition. And we could even be confident, he says, that at the right time, when the Sanhedrin is restored, so a solution to these problems will be found. I'd like to compare this to something that the Rav writes. This relates a little bit to the theme that we saw in the Rav just a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Tamei HaMitzvos. And this is the same theme. And let's try to understand it a little differently. The Rav believed and stressed the importance of surrendering to the Torah. The Torah does encourage creativity, but it also demands that we submit. Appropriate creativity, the Rav writes, reflects man's obligation to imitate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but inappropriate creativity is nothing more than a demonic urge for power. If you take a look at this quote that you have over here, this is from Confrontations. And not always does creative man respond readily to the divine normative summons, which forms the very core of his new existential status as a confronted being. All too often, the motivating force in creative man is not the mandate entrusted to him and to which must be implemented in full at both levels, the cognitive and the normative, but a demonic urge for power. So we've been talking about today the role of Svara, and Svara is a reflection of that creative mandate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, that we're supposed to use our seichel to come up with that which is right and that which is wrong, to be medame milsa l'milsa, even to come up with a chiddush. But when it's taken and applied inappropriately, so that could be very, very destructive. And when we encounter a situation which we find that it, the Torah's ethics, the Torah's mitzvos contradicts our seichel, and our svara. So then our obligation is to submit and to be mevatel ourselves. This is true when it's coming from the Torah and also from the Chachmei Masorah. And Turski makes this point very powerfully in the next source. Modern man, buoyed by the explosion of scientific knowledge and the previously unimaginable advances of scientific technology, wants to know, but does not want to believe, which is mamash we were talking about last week, about the difference between emuna and yidia. Emuna demands submission. We have to make a leap of faith. We can't understand everything. And that's what we talked about last week. We talked about not just emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but emuna in mitzvos and the truth of mitzvos. Man's understanding is the measure of everything. That's the perspective of modern man. Mishpatim sit well with us. Chukim are grading. We are too often unwilling to surrender and acknowledge our limitations. In truth, we are limited not only vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but also lahavdil with regards to our Chachmei HaMasorah. We know there was of their wisdom. There's much in the words of Chazal that we are privileged to understand and appreciate. But at times we encounter chukim in the words of Chazal. We do not understand the what or why of certain mamari Chazal. At such times, we are called upon to surrender and believe. Our acceptance of all halachos and hashkafas HaTorah must be unconditional. In our times, we also witness the profound and tragic truth of an insight provided by the Rav Zatzal. The Rav explains that without the absolute unconditional acceptance and submission to chukim, our commitment to mishpatim will also erode. In his day, the Rav cited the prohibition against murder. This is the ultimate mishpat. And yet in our acceptance of lo sirtzach, and yet if our acceptance of lo sirtzach is rooted only in our intuitive moral sense and not in unconditional surrender to Ratzon Hashem, ultimately even lo sirtzach is rationalized away as our exigencies and predilections dictate. The Rav decried how euthanasia and abortion, acts of murder, are constructed as acts of compassion. In our day, the nightmare of a society which accepts mishpatim but does not surrender to chukim has grown even darker. We are witness to shameless attempts to legitimize homosexuality, which the Torah brands an abomination within Orthodox Judaism. As evidenced by these examples, the reciprocity of faith and knowledge is more vital than hitherto described. They simply cannot exist without each other. Authentic faith requires a foundation of knowledge, but knowledge also requires the support of faith and the act of intellectual surrender within faith. Otherwise, knowledge is susceptible to being relativized and rationalized away. Ultimately, the Torah does give tremendous value to seichel, but it also demands submission. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Nosen HaTorah because he was anav me'od, mikol adam asher al pnei adama, because he was willing to submit, and therefore his great intellect didn't get in the way of his understanding Ratzon Hashem and Ratzon HaTorah. Obviously, there isn't a fundamental machlokes here that we've considered the approaches of them. It's because they both do accept the Torah's values in both, of both submission and the koach of seichel. There are different ways to sometimes think about and deal with what seems like a question, but I think everybody is going to agree that we need to have both of these values. And if we do, so then b'siyata d'shmaya will be zocha to understand Hashem's Torah and be yodei es ha'emes. I want to wish everyone a k'sivach sima tov and a good gebench diyar, and happy to take any questions if there are any now. And b'ezras Hashem, we will pick up next week.
All right, Rabbi, thank you.
Shabbos, Rabbi, Shana Tova.
Shabbos.
Thank you, Chats.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for your mic. I was just wondering, I understand the idea that that new knowledge can be revealed in generations that once they're ready for it. Is Rav Kook saying, though, that a Sanhedrin could determine that certain mitzvos were only meant for like periods, like particular periods of history, and now they're like irrelevant and like they were like supposed to be that way from the beginning?
It sounds that way. Again, I think what he's saying is that they have to determine that through the Midrash HaTorah Nedreshes, but through their understanding of the Torah. But yes, again, to give a mashal, we find Chazal saying that about certain mitzvos, not necessarily to address a moral question, but you know, this mitzvah was l'shah, not l'doros, or something like that. So I think what he's saying is that could be one mechanism that the Sanhedrin could use to address a question of morality. But again, I also think you would certainly acknowledge that it has to stem from the tools of interpretation that the Sanhedrin have. It's a very shocking idea.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Ravi, thank you. I just have maybe a couple of quick clarifications about a couple of things. So I guess this is not maybe such a small clarification, but what exactly was I understood of Cook, what Ravi was saying, but so what's the other take that the Rav is saying? I mean, I understand we were saying that if you do things misvara, so then you're going to end up skewing things. And but so I'm saying, what's the?
Again, I'm not saying that there's a machlokas. I think they're emphasizing different ways of addressing a question, and the Rav's emphasizing that, you know, when we have a question of this sort, our avoda is to submit, to be mevatel ourselves. Rav Kook is saying that, you know, another way of looking at it would be to say that we don't know the answer and we don't know how it's going to be resolved. And that's a reflection of the fact that Hashem has not given us the tools of resolution at this point. But when those tools of resolution will one day be restored, so somehow at that point a solution will be found.
Meaning when we have a Sanhedrin, so then great, and up until that point we just have to recognize the fact that when we will have it, then it's going to make sense.
Right.
Whereas the Rav is saying
the fact that we don't have it now isn't an accident.
Right. And the Rav is saying it doesn't really matter.
Again, the Rav isn't addressing Rav Kook's point, but again, right. Addressing a different value, the value of submission and his batlos. And again, I'm not saying it's a machlokas. There are two ways to think about it. And perhaps, you know, depending on the issue, a different approach would be appropriate.
Right. And then the other point I didn't really so much. We were saying that there's a difference between Hashem being limited by logic versus ethics. Is that what we were saying with the Rambam? Meaning the Rambam,
yes,
versus the Rambam in Yisrael Torah?
Yes. The Rambam seems to say that to limit God, to say God can't do something illogical or impossible based on the words of rules of logic is not a problem. This is Adrabah. You know, it would be a chisaron if he could destroy himself. But that's different than saying that there's a law, a system, or a body of ethics which limits God, which would indeed contradict his oneness.
Uh-huh. Right. So when we say logic, to be limited by logic, we mean like how is destroying oneself considered logic?
Because we could prove that God's existence is necessary. And therefore, necessary means it couldn't be otherwise. It has to be this way. It's true in all conceivable worlds. So if his existence is necessary, so then to destroy himself is a violation of logic. You can't necessarily exist and also not exist. You can't necessarily exist and there be a possibility of non-existence, because to exist necessarily means there's no possibility of non-existence.
So we're saying that within the world of logic, it's okay, the Rambam saying, to suggest that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is limited?
Right, well, meaning not that he can't destroy himself, right? In other words, Kol Yachol, saying HaKadosh Baruch Hu is omnipotent, doesn't mean he can do everything, because he can't destroy himself.
Right. So he's allowed, so just to make sure I understand.
Yeah.
We're saying that, Rambam's saying is that allowed to suggest, and or not allowed to, but we're encouraged, we should be understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could be, in a sense, limited by his, like, I'm just getting confused with the word, meaning he's limited by...
Limited, in this case, doesn't imply a chisaron, right? Adrabba. Ability to destroy yourself would be a chisaron.
Right. I guess I'm just still have to chew a little bit on why that means logic. I'm saying I understand...
Well, why can't he destroy himself? Because he necessarily exists.
Right.
Take a look at the quote that we looked at from the Rambam in the Mordechai Vuchim. Let's just go back to that for a second. And I think you'll see what he's saying. So you see where it is? It's 3:15, right? So he writes, all philosophers consider it impossible for one substratum to have at the same moment two opposite properties, right? So that's impossible by definition. That's, you know, at least what the Rambam would call illogical, right? So it should be, likewise, it is impossible that God should produce a being like himself. Why? Because that would contradict his oneness, or annihilate himself, because that would contradict his necessary existence, or corporify himself, that would contradict his oneness, or change himself, that would contradict his oneness. The power of God is not assumed to extend to any of these impossibilities. So something that's impossible, not, you know, when we say God could do some things that we would use the word impossible, we of course wouldn't say that's true with respect to God. God could break all the physical laws in the world. He could do any nisim because he created those physical laws. So, you know, it's impossible to split the sea. No, it's not. It's impossible for us, but he can, right? But then there's certain things that are inherently impossible. And about those things, so we say that he can't do them.
Uh-huh. Because otherwise it would be a stira in logic.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But when it comes to ethics, so then that for sure Hashem is not limited by. Because then that would imply that
there's something besides him.
Right. Got it. Okay. Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay, sure. Shkayach, good Shabbos.
Hi, Ori. First of all, thank you so much for the shiur. It was really amazing.
My pleasure.
I loved it. I had two questions.
Your question.
What do you think? For Rav Kook, I'm curious if you think that the Rambam is in Hilchos Mamrim. He discusses the kind. Would you say that the Rambam's in the same company as Rav Kook? Meaning, not necessarily with that. I mean, I don't know. Like, on the one hand, like, I think you could maybe suggest you go as far. I'm curious if one could suggest. Rambam himself would go as far as to say that the highest morality or the highest essence of Torah will reveal itself in the time of the Sanhedrin when we have more powers within Tosha Baal Peh, or is it more that he just believes in that the possibility that the Sanhedrin can do as they please doesn't necessarily mean that we're waiting for them to do certain things. It just means that they can or they won't, but it's not necessarily like things are ascending.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, the Rambam certainly doesn't say anything like Rav Kook says. And I don't think Rav Kook thought he was going against Rambam. Mm. The Rambam certainly holds Zosa Torah Lotei Mukhlefes, that's one of the Ikari Emunah. So Torah cannot change, it's eternal and unchanging. Now, so how did the Rambam understand that in terms of, let's say, interpretations of Sanhedrin in general. So that the Rambam does tell us. The Rambam tells us that the role, you know, when Sanhedrin interpret the Torah using the tools of interpretation, so it's not the pshat that everything that the Sanhedrin says was told to Moshe. The Rambam rejects that idea. The Gaonim had that idea. The Gaonim held that, you know, everything that that the Torah was given totally and completely with every detail addressed to Moshe Rabbeinu. And machloka stems from shechichas haTorah. And when you have a machloka, so you see in Chazal, let's say they're trying to recreate that which was forgotten, and you know, one was right and one was wrong. The Rambam writes in his Hakdamah to Perash Mishnayos, and also you see it in Mishnah Torah and other writings, that adirabah, when it comes to ideas that there's a machlokas in, and we're talking about machlokas about dinim d'oraisa.
Yeah.
So it must be that those ideas were not given to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not the pshat that they were given and they were forgotten and then they were recreated, but these were not things that were addressed. And the Rambam writes the, you know, over there at the same place, the beginning of Hilchos Mamrim, that when we have to accept the authority of the Sanhedrin HaGadol that applies to the things that are a mesorah, that are like Halacha L'Moshe Mesinai or Perish Mekubal, it applies to things that they came up with on their own, and then it applies to their legislation. All three of them we have to follow. So the Rambam certainly has the idea that there were understandings of Torah that were new, and that as time went on, the Sanhedrin HaGadol came up with new interpretations, new understandings, ideas that weren't appreciated until that point. Maybe because nobody asked the kasha, maybe because the case never came up, but those ideas were in fact new. So the notion that, so can Torah ever change according to the Rambam? Absolutely not. Lo te muchlefes. Torah will never change, it's eternal. Meaning to say that there's never going to be such a thing that, Bimos HaMashiach, for example, a Navi is going to get up or a Sanhedrin is going to get up and say, okay, you know, you don't have to observe the Torah anymore, or this mitzvah anymore. It's a bris chadasha. It's a, you know, that was for, that certainly the Rambam it says is absolute heresy. But the idea that Sanhedrin will, let's say, lasid lavo,
redefine what that mitzvah means,
understanding of Torah, which wasn't appreciated until that point, that certainly is within, in keeping with the Rambam system. So, he doesn't say that they will. I don't know. Yeah. But I think that's why Rav Kook would say that his approach is not against the
Rambam. Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Have a great Shabbos.
My pleasure. You too. Kol tov.